Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at The Damage Report. Very excited to come to you, not only with an hour of news, but with the best co-pilot I can imagine. Adrian Lawrence joins us once again. Adrian, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. Excited to learn just a few minutes ago that your book, which we've talked about a couple of times, Staying in the Game, the playbook for beating workplace sexual harassment, is now available at shoptyt.com.
No. Yay!
Check it out. Learn something. That's awesome. But anyway, very excited to have you here, in particular because even before we go live, you have already caused me to think differently about one aspect of a story that we're going to be leading the show off in a little bit. So, as always, your expertise is going to come very much in handy, and we're glad to have you here.
Thanks. I'm excited.
That said, thank you everybody for watching, regardless of what platform you're on. It would be great if you could hit the like button and share the stream. I can see in both the YouTube and Twitch chats, 1,000 of Adrian's faces in emoji form. It is all over the place, so that's awesome. Thank you very much, people. And let's see, you can certainly reach out to us during the show if you want to send us comments, tweets, super chats, things like that. We'll read them as we go through this hour of news, but understand ahead of time that after our program is over at 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, if you're over at twitch.tv/TYT, Jordan Yule is going to be diving deep on Deep Dive, and you can join him there. Another awesome jump into the news, probably going to be talking about Yemen. I know it's been one of his big topical focuses recently. But through the course of this hour, we're going to be talking about one of the most recent, yet another egregious act of police brutality, apparently. We've got Fox having to walk back multiple stories that they focused virtually all of their time yesterday on. We've got Oklahoma passing 3 anti-choice bills simultaneously, just ramming them through as fast as they can. And then anti-vaxxers. We've got 2 different ways that anti-vaxxers and anti-maskers are choosing to be just the worst. And so that'll be a lot of fun. With that said, Adrian, you ready to jump into this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. Just one day after last week's verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial, the police apparently shot in incredibly bizarre and barbaric circumstances a man named Andrew Brown Jr. And as the days have gone by, we've been learning more about this particular case. And in fact, we're going to show you a bit of one of the sheriff's statements about what happened, and we'll have some reaction from the family to what happened. But there's one aspect of this I wanted to focus on initially. So it's a 42-year-old man shot by sheriff's deputies in Elizabeth City last Wednesday, when, as CNN puts it, they attempted to serve him with an arrest warrant. And that is generally how the media has been presenting it. But Adrian, we were talking before the show, and you pointed out that that is very much not how the police have actually described what happened. So what have they been saying?
So initially, when there was a kind of a conference with the sheriff of that county, he said unequivocally that it was a search warrant. And he said even, I can confirm that it was an on execution of a search warrant. Nothing about an arrest warrant. And these warrants are very different. A search warrant, as it may imply, is to search something, as opposed to an arrest warrant, which is to seize someone. And they're very different things because they touch upon the police protocol that's involved. And so it really is kind of disturbing, this thought of having multiple guns drawn and this man being shot, as his family is saying, execution style, on what police are saying was initially saying is a search warrant, and then somehow that evolves to now saying it's an arrest warrant and it is a search warrant, and the story seems to be changing along the way, and that's very disconcerting, especially since we're trying to get a hold of this footage.
Yeah, I think I'm very glad that you pointed that out. I don't know what has led to that jump from what the sheriffs have actually said, what the cops have actually said, to what the media is now describing it. Maybe it's just ignorance, I don't know. But I am curious, so you talked there about the difference between the two and what it has to say about what would be reasonable for the police to be doing as they approach this case. But I'm curious, let's say in theory it was an arrest warrant. Does that in any way justify, and I don't mean morally, the cops are not interested in moral justifications, but even in terms of their procedures, if a person begins to drive away, are you allowed to begin unloading your weapons at that person if they're just driving? Well, let's say it was an arrest warrant. It's not, but let's say it was. Are they allowed to do that?
So first, to make clear, like they're saying that there were two arrest warrants now and there is a search warrant. So they're saying, oh, everything's involved in play. So we don't know how that will end up shaking out. But if they do have an arrest warrant and the officers are approaching, how they would handle it would depend on the circumstances, which should very much take into account if that individual has a history of violence. Because if that person was considered armed and dangerous and maybe engaged in violent acts, maybe a murder, attempted murder or whatnot, then it would make sense for the officers to have their guns drawn. It's my understanding that Andrew Brown Jr. has a history of drug offenses. A lot of people have drug offenses that doesn't necessarily equate with violence. And so this thought that they needed to have guns blazing and have shot him in the way that they did, it makes you really want to see that body cam footage. Because if we're gonna use deadly force, you need to show me that your life was threatened, that you were truly, genuinely, authentically afraid for your life, and that Andrew Brown caused it. And if someone's driving away, once again, the thought of that you need to execute deadly force, it's unnecessary, because it's not like this man presents some kind of immediate threat.
Exactly. And this isn't even the only case like this, where a person appeared to be committing the apparently fatal sin of trying to drive away from the cops and they shot the person. And really fast, we're gonna turn to the video in just a second, but I just wanna throw out, this is stepping far aside from the sort of analysis that we're doing, but it hasn't been lost on people that while it's a little bit difficult sometimes to notice differences in the trend because these sorts of cop murders are so common in America, it does seem like in the wake of the Chauvin verdict, they became noticeably more common. And I saw people opining in multiple forums about the fact that whether it can be said to be, it certainly feels like revenge to some extent. That you would imagine that a cop face, like being convicted of multiple charges in a case like this, I don't know, would make people be a little bit more hesitant to use deadly force. And yet we saw right off, immediately afterward, multiple killings like this. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, indeed I do. It was something I actually tweeted about moments after the Derek Chauvin verdict, is the pendulum swing. Because the reality is that by holding this officer accountable, what you're doing is shifting the pendulum toward justice and equality. Generally, when black people in any way have moved toward justice and equality, there has been swift retribution in the back, kind of in the response from the quote unquote opposition. And so in this case, it is totally and completely not surprising that we're now having these shootings of black people who have been unarmed, in part because, hey, it's the thought of we need to shift the pendulum back, remind these people of their place, and essentially just balance things. And this goes on whether we are cognizant of it or not, because that's how unconscious bias works.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, we have been slowly learning more from multiple sources in what happened with Andrew Brown Jr. So we're going to analyze this from multiple perspectives. First of all, taking with a grain of salt, we have a statement from the actual sheriff. So let's turn now to that video.
Today, we also allowed the family of Mr. Brown and his attorney to privately view the video. This tragic incident was quick and over in less than 30 seconds, and body cameras are shaky and sometimes hard to decipher. They only tell part of the story. Outside investigators, both from the FBI and from four other sheriff's offices, are interviewing witnesses and gathering more information.
Okay, so he says it was quick, over in 30 seconds. The camera footage, the body camera footage is shaky and difficult to interpret possibly. Notably, the family was allowed to watch a 20-second clip. Look, I get if the entire incident is 30 seconds, then you can't show 40 minutes of body cam footage, but it does seem strange that they didn't even show the 30 seconds that they're talking about. And I get that footage can sometimes be hard to decipher. I will say seemingly for juries at times, it can be difficult to understand what's plainly shown in the video. But Adrian, what do you think about what the sheriff said there?
Oh, I think it's extremely suspect. The fact that they allowed them to view just like a hot minute, not even a hot minute, of this video cam footage, and also that cam footage that they showed was of the officer who was furthest away from the scene. And that's not to get full perspective as much as it would make it more difficult to see, to hear what was going on. And this really makes you think that there is something that they're trying to cover up, which is also why I wonder what's going on with this whole arrest warrant, search warrant situation, because it seems from day one that they have been hiding things and that something bad went down, especially when we take into context how many officers have now resigned or quit or been put on administrative leave from this department.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, it's like they seem to have learned the lesson. You know, we've had a couple of cases over the last week or so where they have released body cam footage relatively quickly because the public won't take it anymore. They won't, you can't hold it for 9 months. I don't care what Rahm Emanuel thinks about it, that's insane. And yet maybe this is a loophole for them. We'll show a body camera's perspective, not necessarily the one that actually makes the most sense. And we won't show you the whole video for reasons we won't define. And you can't look at multiple perspectives from multiple cameras because I don't know, they act like people, like is it in a weird codec? They act as if it is impossible to get the footage off these cameras. I don't think it's that complicated. I've never owned one, but I'm gonna put out there that I think that you could release all of it almost instantaneously. I think you could set up sort of a Dropbox, drop all the footage, and we could watch it. They choose not to do that.
One of the excuses they came up with was saying we need time to be able to edit so we can blur out the faces of the officer to protect their identity. I'm like, dude, just send it my way. I can click, click, boom on my iPhone if you need to blur out some faces. Like, get out of here.
Yeah, you could, Adrian could throw a cat face up on it or something with a simple filter. Also, like, you're a cop, you were there. You're showing it to the family. It seems weird that your principal focus would be on hiding the identity of the cops. They're not gonna know who the cops are from seeing their face anyway. The entire thing makes no sense to a rational person who's outside of this case. I get that. In any event, we showed you what the cops had to say. Now I wanna turn to the family. So here is one of the most recent media appearances.
If it was you, I or Khalil who committed an act and took a person's life unjustifiably, we should be in jail right now. Should be arrested.
Right now.
You should be arrested. Just because you wear a badge, shield, or star doesn't give you the right to kill. And if you kill, doesn't give you the right to go to be free while a clear killing is on video, unjustifiable killing. If it's unjustifiable, it's homicide. If it's by another and it's intentional, reckless, it's murder.
Adrian?
Oh, yeah. You know, because the thing is homicides, no matter what form they take, committed by the officer, it is considered a homicide. It's murder. It's the question of, is it justifiable? Is it a lawful murder? And in this instance, and given all of the circumstances and all of the excuses we're getting, it kind of seems like this won't be a justifiable homicide. And some people may be facing charges at some point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing We don't know. There's a lot that we don't know. And I think that Adrian and I have both attempted to be as reasonable as can be expected, considering the clear pattern that's been established over the past few weeks in, you know, wondering about what potential explanation could justify shooting a person multiple times, including with this just came out, the family released the results of an independent autopsy saying that he was also shot in the back of the head. For so far, and more information could come out, the only explanation that's been provided is he tried to drive away, which to a reasonable person does not justify literally anything that happened. And when you have, as Adrian alluded to, 7 deputies have been placed on administrative leave, 2 others have resigned, 1 deputy has retired. That's not normally what we see in this sort of case, so it makes one wonder what is really going on. One would have to wonder less if they would release the 6 or 7 other body cameras footage that apparently is there, since so many people were on the scene. I guess all of them were turned off. I don't know, but the entire thing is not only disgusting and a tragedy in the way that so many of these cases are, but this has an added layer of something shady and suspicious appears to be going on.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Fox News has had to retract multiple stories over the past 24 hours. You know, just little stories that they focused almost all of their coverage on yesterday. The first here, you're going to have them retracting their big story about Biden apparently having a plan to restrict you to 1 hamburger a month.
On Friday, we told you about a study from the University of Michigan to give some perspective on President Biden's ambitious climate change goals. That research from 2020 found that cutting back how much red meat people eat would have a drastic impact on harmful greenhouse gas emissions. The data was accurate, but a graphic and a script incorrectly implied that it was part of Biden's plan for dealing with climate change. That is not the case.
Yes, so the graphic and the script, which is on these scripted shows what I would call the show, implied that it was Biden's plan. Yes, it implied it. All of their chyrons implied it. Bye bye burgers, they would say. The later shows, after that's their straight news show that got it straight wrong, their later shows cut out all of that stuff about the study and the greenhouse gas emissions and just talked about Biden's plan to restrict your burgers. So that was, Adrian, that was a retraction to some extent. I don't know, what did you think about it?
I just find it extremely comical. It's like, it's Fox News. They have a wealth of resources and they can't even get it right. They're so busy trying to condemn the Biden administration that they're essentially serving up less than good meat. Lots of bull, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And so the entire thing, which we talked about in the pre-show yesterday, began as a result of a Daily Mail article. The Daily Mail article made stuff up. It just straight made stuff up. There's nothing in Biden's plans about restricting your meat consumption or 4 pounds a year or 1 burger, nothing. It just doesn't exist. And so the right-wing media thought, oh, that's great. Our viewers love feeling like victims and they love stuffing themselves full of beef. So let's combine those two interests And they then started talking about the Daily Mail article, except even Fox seemed to understand that having a bunch of graphics that attribute this information to the Daily Mail probably isn't gonna pass the smell test. So they started attributing it to the Department of Agriculture. That's not even where it was attributed to in the Daily Mail article. They just lied about the source because the source is obviously not at all reputable. But the issue is that while I guess they deserve a minimal amount of credit for retracting it, yesterday I predicted that they would never actually admit that they were wrong when it turned out that they were. What do we think in terms of all the people that saw it, Adrian, all the people that saw their coverage on that show, on The Five, on Jeanine Pirro, on Sean Hannity, all of those, all the people who tweeted about it, politicians and pundits and all of that. So now you have the retraction. What percentage of people are gonna be reached that were reached with all the coverage?
Oh, you know, it'll be nil. It'll be so minuscule. And people, it's like those people who read things on Facebook and they hold on to it, latch onto it. So then they look for confirmation bias when they're doing their daily life and say, oh, that is true, that it's true. And it takes the will of God to disabuse them of their ignorance. Mm-hmm. I think that that's exactly what's going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if meat and shares of beef and companies end up spiking because people are trying to seize them, just like it happened when there's this rumor that what Obama was gonna take away your guns. Same kind of thing. The ignorance sells, and who knows, maybe somebody's getting a kickback along the lines.
Yeah, and there's never any learning. So Biden's gonna steal your burgers, which I guess is not as bad as a couple of years ago, AOC was just gonna ban all cows. Remember that? The Green New Deal was gonna ban your cows. I mean, it wasn't. It didn't say that, but that didn't stop them from believing it from that point until now. They still believe it. And so this stuff about the burgers, like, you didn't, initially they had to cite the Daily Mail thing. But a few hours later on Fox, it was just a known quantity. Every conservative knew about this. You could tweet about plant-based beer and everyone knew what it was because it filters out through their media ecosystem almost instantaneously. So it's good that they retracted, but yeah, as you alluded to, I don't think any conservative is gonna feel like that was wrong and I should learn something as a result of this. That when a piece of news comes that is just so delectable, like a nice burger and really convenient, and it makes everything that I feel right, it just agrees with everything that I believe, maybe I should be a little bit more cautious about that stuff. I don't think that that's gonna be the product of this retraction.
Nope.
No. And you know what? It's not even the only time that that had to happen. So yesterday on Fox, they went mad about a story that came out about supposedly migrant children in detention at the border were gonna be given copies of a kid's book that Vice President Kamala Harris had written. So here is some coverage yesterday about that story.
Harris's office saying they weren't aware of these welcome packs and that they're usually organized by members of the community. Wow, Dana, imagine if Trump gave Art of the Deal to kids in cages. I can't even see what they would say about that. I don't know.
It's
kind of silly when you think about it. Right, what do you think's going on here?
Okay, so it's kind of silly when you think about it. What do you think's going on here? Well, so it struck even him, a person with the minimal critical thinking capacity of a Jesse Waters, it struck him as silly. What do you think's going on here? Well, yeah, it was silly because it wasn't true. It didn't happen and they didn't care enough to actually check before running with it and having a panel of four experts, millionaires, break down the fact that supposedly these kids were getting the book, Adrian.
Oh, that's great. And generally with kids and books, rarely can they actually read them. You usually have to help them. So it's like there are so many things that would have made me think, is this actually accurate? It's so entertaining, the things that these people will run with. It's wonderful that, and I actually thought The Art of the Deal was a coloring book. So I'm surprised that Trump had words. That's a lot.
Yeah, and I guess one significant difference between the two is that Kamala Harris apparently actually wrote her book. Trump had nothing to do with the writing of his book, and the author has spent the last few decades attacking him online. But yeah, it wasn't true. It was convenient. But why would they do that? Seriously, why would they give the book? As if nobody would find out about that, as if it wouldn't look terrible. And by the way, Fox. If you want to get all worked up and angry about something, are the kids being there enough? What do you need the book for? Like, you finally found a part of this story that you're angry about and it's the made up part? No, the real part is horrific enough. Now, the issue is that it apparently took them quite a while to get that that story wasn't true. Despite the fact, by the way, that fact checks of it in places like the Washington Post have been available, Fox went into a second news day of talking about this. Now, I want to go to Kilmeade being sort of fact checked on Fox in real time about this story.
Children's version of Donald Trump's books, because he's written quite a few of them. Imagine if they appeared at the border in a bag of goodies as you arrive here illegally.
Well, according to the Washington Post this morning, they're saying that it's not accurate. I mean, Peter asked an excellent question because we had heard that, but they're just saying that a book had been donated to a citywide drive. It's not placed in these welcome bags.
Well, I think the question was if the government was paying for the book whether or not she was making money on it. It sounds like a third party.
Okay, so that was the question. Well, it was a stupid question because the story wasn't true. So I don't care what your question was. It was all based on a fantasy. I don't know. How tall is the average orc? It has nothing to do with the real world. I don't care what your story was. And bear in mind, he had to defend the question because the question was delivered by his son to the press secretary. But really fast, because there you had Brian Kilmeade getting like mildly worked up about this story, which is his job. That's supposed to be the skill that he has. And he hadn't actually looked up the story that morning, which is why he didn't know that it had already been retracted. So I want to show you a little zoom in on when he finds out that he's wrong. And I want you to take a look at his facial expression.
Well, according to the Washington Post this morning, they're saying that it's not accurate. Peter asked an excellent question because we had heard that. But
okay, I didn't expect the clown. But I love that, like, he just like, he looks at the camera like in shock and then, but not like, disappointed in myself because I believe something that was too convincing. I love that, Marissa. Great work. Not like I failed in some way in this job that basically has no bar. I still failed and I should expect more of myself as a grown man. Nope, it's just how can I spin this so that I'm still right, Adrian?
Yes, that was rather entertaining, especially just like you've observed. Like, you'd think he'd exercise some common sense before he'd spend all this time railing off on some nonsense, or at least hedge his bets. Like, say, if this were the case, then, like, do something. But no, he just jumps full in. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He deserves everything.
Yeah, and look, that was his response. Ducey's response is, so we blocked off this time to talk about this story, and it doesn't matter that it's not true. Apparently, we still have to talk about it. So here is his attempt to continue talking about this fake, made-up story as if it's real news.
Two questions. Number one, is that book in English or is it in Spanish? I can't really tell from that image. And the other question is, if a group is spending money to buy the book, you know, why wouldn't they spend the money to buy food or clothes or other hygiene elements? Why would they feel they needed to give them her book?
He's already been told one volunteer put a book in a bag. Presumably the volunteer had the book. There was not a major order. Nobody called borders. That didn't happen. He's already been told that, and yet he's still continuing. He had thought, I'm going to appear to actually have a heart for once and talk about how food and toothbrushes would be better than books. Oh, it's not true? I got nothing. I'm just gonna stick with the script I wrote last night. It's pathetic, and yet it is one of the most watched shows, news-based shows on TV.
Hi, it speaks to, unfortunately, the audience. You know, it really just, this guy seems to think common sense is a preferred qualification as opposed to a prerequisite in his position. And so he's really going to continue going down this path of trying to condemn Kamala Harris and this book situation. It's just, you know, just admit you're wrong and move on, brother.
Yeah. But nobody's going to, I mean, I guess she admitted that it was wrong. She didn't like when she announced it, she didn't say, and so all of our coverage yesterday about this, all the front page stories and all that are wrong. People who tweeted about it aren't admitting it. The tweets are still, Ronna McDaniel, head of the RNC, says, after learning officials are handing out Kamala Harris's book to migrants and facilities at the border, it's worth asking, was Harris paid for these books? Is she profiting from Biden's border crisis? Well, yes, presumably she got royalties for that one book that someone once bought and then gave to a kid. Yes, that's still up. Any learning, any evolution, admitting that she was wrong, that she fell for something that seemed convenient and got tons of retweets as a result? No. Senator Tom Cotton says the Biden administration's weakness caused a surge of illegal immigration. Now they're forcing taxpayers to buy Kamala Harris's book to give to these illegal immigrants. No, they're not. You were wrong when you tweeted about that. So anything, any learning? No, there's not going to be anything. And by the way, it's not impossible. I'm not going to name names here, but I'm in some private DM groups with other progressive and leftists online. And some of them had seen that story. They're people that are not predisposed to like either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. And so they thought the story looked pretty bad too. When they found out it was wrong, they talked about it with each other and admitted that they had been wrong in believing it, spreading it, memes and all that stuff. That is possible to do. And maybe to have a little bit better of a radar for BS news like that in the future. But I don't think they're going to. And the issue is that it might be something that caught some random people on Twitter. For Fox though, this is what their day of news was about yesterday. It's not about income inequality or lack of affordable access to healthcare. They make up stories like this. And they have to. That's how they fill the time. They can't afford to be more discerning in their news. Look at how long they spent talking about Dr. Seuss, a private decision that some corporation made. And so unfortunately, there's not going to be any learning from this. There's not gonna be any change from this. And millions of people are still gonna watch this stuff come away with completely false ideas of what's going on in this country. And we just have to make democracy work despite that. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just find it to be really interesting how people, assuming it was true, that they were condemning Kamala for getting money off of these books, yet we just came out of an administration where self-dealing was the norm and setting yourself up for kickbacks and making sure that, hey, you get paid in every potential opportunity was very much practice. Like, where were these people then?
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, if she was making tons of money from the government buying her book to give to migrants, if that was actually true, that would be a scandal that we'd talk about. That we'd talk about. People who talked about Ivanka and Trump and all of them making so much money, but they weren't interested in those things before. It's all just, it's all wholly contingent. That's all it is. Anyway, why don't we press on to our next story? Another doozy. Oklahoma is already early in the year, the second state in the country to pass what is referred to as a heartbeat bill, although that designator is false in a lot of ways that have to do with science, so they're not gonna be interested. With the governor passing or signing, I should say, three separate bills that curtail reproductive rights in one day. So here he is tweeting about it, he's very happy. This guy holding it up and smiling at the camera. I'm keeping my promise to sign all pro-life legislation based on the incredibly narrow and contradictory designation that I give to what is pro-life and what is not. So yeah, he's gonna do that. He's going to make sure that some of these fetuses are born, and then once they're born, they're on their own. Anyway, let's give an idea of what these bills would actually do. HB 1102 would effectively ban abortions outside of medical emergencies by threatening medical providers with losing their medical licenses for at least a year if they perform an abortion. It makes an exception for, quote, for an abortion necessary to prevent the death of the mother or to prevent substantial or irreversible physical impairment of the mother that substantially increases the risk of death, but not for instances of rape or incest. It's always a fun game to play with these conservative states, which of those they'll allow and which they won't. It's become more common, recently trendy, to not allow exceptions for any of those. So are they not merciful? HB 2441, the heartbeat bill, would require ultrasound checks for a fetal heartbeat and would ban abortions if one is detected. It makes exceptions if there is a, quote, serious risk of substantial and irreversible physical impairment of a major bodily function to the pregnant person. But again, not for instances of rape or incest. And let's pause there for just a second. The heartbeat bills have become very trendy for anti-abortion advocates recently because it is a designation that allows you to ban abortions much earlier. So if you had previously done bans at 20 weeks, like an actual date, or 15, and you want to get it lower, then just find something that happens around 6 weeks. And so that's what they've done. The issue with the heartbeat bill, you know, I'll give you my issues with that, but I want to make sure, Adrian, what do you think about the first that we've talked about so far? And then bear in mind, there's another one coming.
Well, I think this is just ways in which these states are trying to get Roe v. Wade in front of the super conservative court to get it overturned, because they want to limit essentially a person's right to choose what to do with their body when it comes to whether they wish to go forth and multiply. And this is just, it's unfortunately an aspect of conservatives taking advantage of the fact that we now have a very right-leaning judiciary. And it's just, it's wild. We're essentially rolling back time to take us back into the dark ages. We're not progressing whatsoever.
What's your read on the current state of the Supreme Court in terms of its willingness to take up these sorts of issues? And if they do, are you expecting that curtailing of reproductive rights will come in the form of them steadily chipping away at things, allowing states to do whatever they want? Or do you think that the Republicans will get what they've been dreaming of for like half a century, just totally reversing Roe v. Wade?
I think that they're better positioned to reverse Roe v. Wade without question. We have Clarence Thomas. He is just foaming at the mouth, just chomping at the bit in order to reverse things, as we saw in his opinion last week, essentially calling out the majority, saying, just say it with your chest, let's do this. And you know, when we have now Amy Coney Barrett, we've got Alito, we have got this right-leaning conservative court that is really, they feel so encouraged and just driven to impose their own personal ideologies on the rest of the nation. And it's just more of the reason why we know we need to go from 9 to 13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely a fear. And the challenges or the things that could potentially work their way up are coming fast in multiple states. It's entirely possible that could finally happen. To return to the heartbeat bill for just a second though, the fundamental issue with these is that they don't mean anything. There is no scientific, no medical, no moral distinction between the state of a fetus pre and post heartbeat. It just doesn't make any actual sense. It is intended to manipulate you emotionally to believe, oh, that seems significant, I guess the fetus is different now. If it was true, if what they were describing was the actual change from not having a heartbeat to having a heartbeat, it would be meaningless. But what you need to understand is that it's even more manipulative than that. The heartbeat bill detects something that is not a heartbeat. It is not a functioning cardiovascular system. It is not a functioning heart. It is a few cells giving off an electrical signal. That's all it is. It wouldn't matter if it was a functioning heart. It makes, again, no moral difference whatsoever. But that's not even what it's doing. They are purposefully calling it heartbeat to put an image in your head that is not in any way scientifically accurate for the period that they're actually looking at the fetus. So understand this is just manipulation from floor to ceiling. But in any event, there's also HB 1904, which would require abortion providers to be board certified in obstetrics and gynecology, a move that critics say is unnecessary as some abortions earlier in pregnancy can be performed by administering pills. I would say to those critics, you dummies, they don't care. They're not doing it because they believe you need the expertise. They're doing it to make it harder to do. They want you to have all of this extra training to do something that they will then put you in jail if you actually do. All Adrian, it's just, I feel like what you just said, like we are going back in time. It's like I've stepped through a portal into the 1950s and Republicans, despite their inability to win a national election, rule seemingly everything.
Yep, and it's just, I don't know, I just see so much hypocrisy and just ignorance in this, in part because it's like, what's the motivation other than to control people's bodies, then what happens? They end up having these children who are unwanted. So you're creating generations of people who will end up probably feeding the criminal justice system. So what, you want a higher body count so you can make more money off of the fact that we're having a privatized prison system and there's a lot to benefit off of that? It's like, and also we already have a world that's inundated with too many people to begin with. Like, it's illogical and it's just so incredibly ignorant. You can't, every which direction you look, it makes no sense.
Yeah, just disgusting. And seeing it and knowing that there's like millions and millions of Americans that are like, yes, this is what I want out of my government. Ignore the actual crises that I say bother me. I'm, you know, I have economic anxiety. I don't have no interest in my government actually doing anything about it. But just talk about cancel culture, make abortions more difficult to have, and we'll be fine. And that delivers them, like Oklahoma will never have a Democratic governor. This is all they need to actually deliver. In a state where I'm going to guess it was not super easy to get an abortion to begin with. Before these bills, I have a feeling it was pretty difficult. I want to talk about an individual named Dave Grossman, a guy who might be able to make the claim to have trained members of law enforcement and in law enforcement related fields more than virtually anyone else. And what he's been training them in is insane. And it's not difficult to imagine how it could have helped to contribute fairly directly to the widespread police brutality that we see on a daily basis in America. So he has a thing he calls killology. And I can define it, but you almost don't have to. If it's called killology, it's not good. But anyway, he created and popularized it. It instructs his students to be less hesitant to use deadly force in defense of their innocent neighbors. His fixation on this mentality is seemingly fueled with a messianic self-appointment to save the flocks, as he calls, those are civilians, by training sheepdogs, which he defines as lawfully armed community members, to treat even the smallest of American towns like war zones laced with imminent threats. So he's got killology. He says, all of you are too hesitant to murder people, slash I'm really into Christian imagery. Anyway, in his America, it's a terrifying place where police are both the primary targets of and defenders against super predation. Though many independent sources show that the violent crime rate in America has steadily declined since the early 1990s, Grossman maintains that America is now scarier than ever, and that cops may well be the ones with the most to fear. He says, we know that if it were not for all the body armor, bulletproof vests worn by officers, law enforcement fatalities in the United States would easily be double or even triple what they are today. If this is not war, then you tell me what is, and I will not listen to you. So sure, the numbers are low, but in my mind, they could be higher. And so cops need to be more ready to kill people, Adrian. They sure have seemed hesitant, haven't they?
Oh yeah, number one, that doesn't seem to be the case. I'd be afraid if they were actually out there hunting us. Because that's essentially what this man is encouraging police to do, as opposed to protect and serve, because I thought that that was, you know, hey, their little motto, not to hunt and kill. This guy is dangerous, and this mentality that he is infusing in officers is only going to hurt us as citizens.
Definitely, definitely. And, you know, I'm not a serious person, so I'm going to say something that's not particularly serious. So he makes that point there about if you're not for the body armor, the bulletproof vest, we'd be losing way more cops. I'm going to make a prediction. I don't know Dave Grossman. I really don't. I'm going to guess he's not against restrictions on armor-piercing bullets. I'm just going to put that out there. I don't know, but he seems really worried about bulletproof vests. We'll see if he's interested in stopping people from getting the technology that would be able to penetrate them. In any event, why is this significant? It's not just significant because he is off giving ballroom speeches that are going to convince people that they need to do basically become mini Zimmermans. No, it's that he has conducted trainings for every federal law enforcement agency, every branch of the armed forces, and cops in all 50 states, leading seminars and trainings nearly 300 days a year. So admittedly, he rises and grinds, I guess. He does a lot of these trainings, but unfortunately, he's training the sort of people that have the opportunity and seemingly the motivation to use deadly force on a regular basis. And it's not just that the actual, the like official police training is you should be terrified, and if you're terrified, pull out your gun and start shooting. It's this guy saying you've got some sort of natural like hesitation to kill. You need to train that out of you. It's wrong of you to think that killing is a bad thing, Adrian. And this is just a really, really bad combination here.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's telling people ignore your instincts and just kill, kill, kill. Like it's problematic to begin with. And I know the Biden administration is supposed to be looking into elements of police reform and things that they can do. And something they might want to look into is having training practices that are uniform and consistent. Because the fact that this guy is getting hired to train law enforcement is very, very scary. And it should not be the case. There's no reason that cops should assume automatically that we're the opposition, that we are in some kind of war. An us them mentality is nothing more than essentially making us target practice.
Yeah, and look, we sort of speculate about what effect this could have. We can't necessarily point directly to causality, but we can look at these sorts of trainings and see who's been involved in them. So for instance, Philando Castile, who was killed during a traffic stop by a cop in 2016. The officer who killed Philando Castile had previously attended a lethal force class called the Bulletproof Warrior. And why are all of these named as if they're just like overly macho, desperate, try-hard YouTubers that are running these things? Because basically that's what they are. They've just aged a bit. So that class was taught by Calibre Press, which claims to train nearly 20,000 officers per year, which should terrify you. Until recently, one of their most prominent speakers was Dave Grossman. As Jamel Hill pointed out, but more training, am I right? Yes, they just need more training. Better question would be which training? And that is a question that they do not want to answer. In any event, we want to give you a bit more of a direct look at what this Grossman guy is all about. So here is what some of what you might have been exposed to had you been one of the people to train in one of these 300 or so classes each year.
Once you've made the decision to take a human life, you're a transformed creature, you're a predator. What does a predator do? They kill. Only a killer can hunt a killer. Are you emotionally, spiritually, psychologically prepared to snuff out a human life in defense of innocent lives? If you can't make that decision, you need to find another job.
Okay, so you saw his face. I'm just gonna put it out there. He looks like every guy in Unsolved Mysteries that they haven't proven did it, but you know he definitely did it. He looked insane. If I was in that crowd, I would have been worried that he might kill me at any moment. And that's the guy that is supposed to train cops to be more ready to deploy lethal force. Not just cops, soldiers, FBI, every law enforcement agency in the country effectively has relied on this guy to help them decide when they need to kill.
The thing that really kind of hit me was saying spiritually aligned to kill. Like, what does this have to do with spiritual? Like, is it like the Holy Spirit needs to be in me and ready so that I can gun down some civilian? Like, whoa, this guy is Captain Extreme.
Yeah, it's the weird combination of not enough people are dying with the weird God stuff. Like, I'm an atheist. I get it. I have no basis for talking about this, but like, I feel like sometimes I'm a little bit more familiar with their theology and their Bible than they are. Like Jesus didn't release an album called Locked and Loaded. Like, that's not what he was about. He really seemed to be against some of the killing. Read a Bible, people. But any event, I want to jump heads up to the director, Brandon. I want to go to the third video because it gets even weirder, if that's possible.
Cop says knock down, drag out, fight, cuffed them and stuffed them. Finally get home at the end of the shift and cop says gunfight, bad guys down, I'm alive. Finally get home at the end of the incident and they all say, the best sex I've had in months. Both partners are very invested in some very intense sex. But there's not a whole lot of perks that come with this job. You find one, relax and enjoy it.
That guy has someone in his basement. I swear to God, someone go and check that guy's basement. Adrian?
Yeah, I just hope the sex is consensual, because you're right. Like, he is a little bit crazy and a height. Like, that is disgusting. What is he going to start doing? Viagra ads? Like, come on. The thought of, I just took a life. Yeah, let me go get laid now. That's your selling point? Problems.
That was the creep. That was among the creepiest things that I think I've ever seen. The look on his face at the end. And as we're doing this segment, I'm going to admit, I'm a little bit worried that now that we've done this, that he's going to kill me. I think that there's a chance. So look, if I turn up in weird circumstances, I didn't do it. He definitely did it, everybody. And please check his basement as soon as you can. Anyway, we're like laughing to some extent. It's our defense mechanism. His is spraying with a machine gun. But this is a guy that is influential. This is a guy, all of the people in that room, the mission is, whether he succeeded or not, and maybe he doesn't because he's a terrible speaker, the mission is he wants those guys to leave the room thinking, yeah, I wanna be a bulletproof warrior. I'm gonna kill someone, then I'm gonna go sleep with my wife. That's what we need more of in this country. And hey, what do you know? We live in a country where cops routinely kill people that they didn't have to. It's weird. I don't know what could be leading to that. I just don't understand it. The anti-vaxxers and the anti-maskers are who they are. And they are very much who they are, very much in public. And they want you to know that they will not stand for reasonable public health precautions. But it has gotten even worse. I want to show you some pictures that were taken at a protest in the UK, mind. So as awful as these sorts of people have been over the last year in the US, now it's on you, Britain. Here's what happened. Chloe Addlestone tweeted out, so horrific to see disgusting people wearing a yellow star at today's protest saying no COVID. I shouted at them and they told me I was a Nazi for wearing a mask. It's indicated, I don't know for sure, that Chloe is in fact Jewish, but apparently was called a Nazi for pointing this out. And here are the photos. An individual doing cosplay as Roger Stone here is wearing the yellow star that says no COVID on it. This woman has one as well. I guess they made them and tried to hand them out. But yes, in case it's not clear, and I don't see how it could be more clear, they're saying that they are being treated like Jewish individuals suffering under the oppression of the Nazis. Adrian, that's just, I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but they're doing this in public. Not just in front of the cameras, but for the cameras. They want to be seen. They feel like they've nailed it with this yellow star thing.
You know what? That is like a combination of audacity and ignorance. Like, how could they legitimately think that there is any kind of analogy here between the Holocaust and having to wear masks and practice social distancing? Like, that is so incredibly disrespectful and disgusting. You know, any kind of backlash that they received in public, it wasn't enough. Because whoever can go out and do this and thinks it's okay, they really need a helping of some, you know what, I'm gonna help you out in getting this together, because it's not right.
Yeah, these are people in the UK. It's possible they're not conservatives. I will just assume that they're conservatives, although there are certainly people who are not that are wrong on these issues, that are so desperate to be victims. It reminds me of Dave Rubin's book, Don't Burn This Book, that he was just so hoping someone would burn. Just please burn my book so I can complain about how I've been canceled. And that's what it is. They put on the yellow stars. They are the same as the Jews. Notably, do you know, Adrian, what didn't happen at the end of this protest? They weren't marched away to camps. Killed? Yeah, no, they weren't killed. There were no gas chambers. They were allowed to walk around without masks, certainly without vaccines flowing through their bodies. And they just went home afterward. Another opportunity, as always, to learn something. I have a feeling they did not. But responsible people did try. The Auschwitz Memorial tweeted, instrumentalization of the tragedy of Jews who suffered, were humiliated, marked with a yellow star, and finally isolated in ghettos and murdered during the Holocaust in order to argue against vaccination that saves human lives is a sad symptom of moral and intellectual decline. And boy, have we declined. That is just disgusting. Now, they're not the only ones though. I want to talk about an individual on the city council for Temecula, not far from where we're at actually. Now, Temecula had apparently been, they had this virtual meeting of their city council where they were talking about how long they were going to remain in virtual meetings. Now, one member of the city council, Jessica Alexander, was not having it, and she decided to analogize her suffering in a regrettable way.
So my last thing that I just want to say, because you touched on a great point, Zach, but I think something that we can all understand and agree with is, look at Rosa Parks. She was accommodated in the back of the bus, but she finally took a stand and moved to the front because she knew that that wasn't lawful. It wasn't truth. So she took a stand. At what point in time do we? At what point in time do we? I'm getting to the point where I'm getting accommodated in my office. I'm getting pushed to the back of the bus. This is what I'm telling you I feel like. I feel like I'm getting pushed to the back of the bus. At what point in time do I come out and stand up and say I've had enough? And that's what I'm doing. Because for the last year, I've had to go around because, not because I wanted to always go around without a mask, but the fact of the matter is I cannot put it on. I will not put it on. So it's not that I want to be disrespectful. But the fact of the matter is when is enough enough? And it's been a year. Enough is enough.
Adrian?
It gets so tiring when people really minimize, devalue your oppression and like to think that inconvenience is on that same par, on that same platform. It's like you have no idea the suffering, the struggle of family, ancestors, Black people, no matter where they go or experience it, and to equate wearing a mask and again respecting social distancing and taking protocols to Rosa Parks and what she did, get out of here. Like, I just, how do you even reason or rationalize with these people? It's just, and the fact that they see it as on par, that's so mind-blowing.
Yeah, and I mean the other council members, I don't think they knew exactly what they were supposed to say to that. They're just having a conversation about when they should go back to in-person meetings. I could be wrong, I apologize if I'm wrong. I believe that member of the city council was a Marine. I could be getting that wrong about the branch of service, but this is a person who's been trained to do heroic stuff, who feels like now this is the chance to be a hero. Like choosing to not wear a mask specifically to send the message that enough is enough. That's madness from a person that we should be able to expect far more from. Take your pick, because they're a Marine or because they're an elected official. Either of those should be enough.
Yeah,
600,000 people have died.
I went to Temecula to wine taste, and they have a robust kind of wine community. And so maybe she was drunk. I'm just like, that's the only excuse I can give you, because this is just absurd.
That is you being very kind. That is best case scenario. I believe it's probably not. I'm not gonna play more video, but she said at one point there was no flu this year. That went away. COVID cured the flu. Like, no, but do you get it? We wore masks and it stopped the spread of disease. Like, do you get the point that you're making is not the actual point there? Or she says her argument is that we don't need to wear the masks anymore because the virus is 99.94% survivable. Like, a reasonable argument could be made at some point that, well, we've been tracking the incidence of the virus in Temecula and it's been consistently low. We've got X amount of vaccination and here is why we get to go back to normal. Not, it was never a big deal. Thousands and thousands of Californians have died from the virus, some of them her constituents. But apparently, I guess they were just weak because it's such a survivable virus. It wouldn't affect any real people. Like, even at a time when a case could be made, she's making the exact wrong case. And by the way, Temecula, notably, was recently rocked with another scandal. In June, the then mayor, James Stu Stewart, his nickname's Stu, resigned after he wrote an email that, quote, He didn't believe there's ever been a good person of color killed by a police officer. That's what their mayor resigned for. So that's the silver lining, right? Had to leave office. Consequences for saying something terrible. Now, he claimed at the time that he dictates his messages because he has dyslexia, and the word good was accidentally added. Now, I want to read that quote for you, taking out the word that was accidentally added, and you tell me if it's better. Quote, he didn't believe there's ever been a person of color killed by a police officer. Nope, that doesn't make any sense. That's not any better. Your excuse sucks, but it doesn't suck that bad. Not for Temecula, because he ran for city council again and he won election in November after writing that email.
Dude,
anything.
Hey, it's like racism. It's just not that big a deal. It's not a deal breaker. But I love the lies, how far people go to not acknowledge their racism. It's like, dude, we're socializing the system. Just be cool with it and like just do better. But that lie was just, that was up there with Rosa Parks, okay?
Yeah, it's like hiding behind dyslexia in a way that doesn't have anything to do with dyslexia. I guess it's maybe not as bad as the star or the Rosa Parks, but it's really, really bad. Whether you're a mayor or a city council member, you can't believe things like that and serve the public. But unfortunately, Temecula apparently is not that bad, is not that against it. Anyway, Adrian, I apologize for burdening you with so many horrible garbage people, but you're a trooper and I want to appreciate you. I want to tell you how much I appreciate you joining us for the show.
Thank you for having me, and I don't mind it. I run into garbage people every day.
Oh, I'm sure. And by the way, as we alluded to earlier, Adrian's book is now up at shoptyt.com. I think we have the image right there. Staying in the Game, the playbook for beating workplace sexual harassment, now available at shoptyt.com. So if you'd like to see more of Adrian's work, you can definitely head there and pick it up. Adrian, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you.
In the early weeks of the Biden administration, he signed a flurry of executive orders, and some of them had to do with the US support for the Saudi war on Yemen, scaling back the direct US involvement in that war, which applied to certain areas. But as time has passed, we've found out that there are more and more areas where we are actually going to be continuing support, if not directly. And in one of the most important areas, the ongoing blockade of Yemen, Biden has been notably silent. So what's going on there? And is it possible to shift the administration's position? Well, we're very lucky to be joined once again on the program by the legislative manager for Middle East Policy at the National Committee on National Legislation. Sanal Taib, welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me, John.
Always glad to talk to you about this topic. I hope that at some point there's nothing for us to talk about there, but we haven't yet reached it. So tell me a little bit about some of your most recent efforts in this area.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate all the coverage you've given Yemen over the years. Most recently, what we're really trying to work on is ending Saudi Arabia's blockade on Yemen. Most recently, starting in January of this year, Saudi Arabia has really constricted the flow of fuel into Hodeidah port. And that fuel is absolutely essential for the operation of hospitals, the delivery of food. So it's really exacerbating the hunger crisis. And the World Food Program is predicting that 400,000 children could die in the coming weeks or months in 2021 as a result of the war and blockade on Yemen. And they're asking for it to be lifted as a humanitarian act. And one thing that the Friends Committee on National Legislation is really trying to do is echo the call of David Beasley at the World Food Program and putting as much pressure as we can on the Biden administration to use all the diplomatic tools they have and all the leverage they have over the Saudi-led coalition to get them to lift this blockade and finally allow food, fuel, and medicine into the country freely and decouple it from ongoing negotiations that are frankly really unstable. We're just saying this is a humanitarian issue. It should be dealt with apart from all of the complex negotiations that are happening.
Yeah. Yeah, unstable, as you point out. And also, let's say hypothetically, the negotiations go well. If the negotiations take weeks or months, it's not going to bring back the people who've died in the interim, of course. Exactly. And so, have you gotten anything out of either President Biden himself or any member of the administration about the Saudi blockade?
So, one, I mean, there's been a lot that's been going on. So FCNL led this 70 plus group advocacy letter signed by a bunch of celebrities like Mark Ruffalo, Marianne Williamson, and others. So that, you know, spurred a congressional letter led by Reps Dingell, Pocan, and Khanna. About 76 members signed that. And then there was another letter by Chairman Deutsch from the House Foreign Affairs Middle East Subcommittee. So got a lot of congressional action, a lot of civil society action. And the administration response was basically that there is no blockade. They admitted that there were fuel restrictions, but their legal definition means it's not a blockade. And you know, for me, it looks like a blockade. It's a blockade. It's preventing the free flow of all of these important goods into the country. So, you know, that's a sign that our pressure is working. Over the weekend, though, I think it's really important to note that the Biden administration actually admitted for the first time since the executive order you mentioned that ongoing maintenance by US contractors for Saudi warplanes was in fact continuing. And that to me is a sign that we're still involved in offensive operations in the war in Yemen via the Saudi blockade. So that's a really critical issue. I'm so glad we're able to discuss this. I mean, the announcement was just made just a few days ago. And not to, you know, so that was critical. And then just last week, US envoy to Yemen, Tim Lenderking, you know, as he was getting all these questions from members of the House and Senate, said that I'm not in the information loop on ongoing US military support for the Saudi-led coalition, which it is pretty, you know, pretty I don't even know what the word is. It's just pretty insane to me. It's just crazy that after this point, he doesn't know, the person in charge of diplomacy in Yemen for the United States doesn't know if the military is supporting the Saudi-led coalition. And you know, we need more action. I think what we're calling for now is for Congress to take this up and to force the question, force a vote, force more legislation to cut off this flow of maintenance support and spare parts transfers.
Yeah. Well, look, it certainly doesn't seem like this is an incredibly high profile issue for the Biden administration, unfortunately. If you have this lack of information, if they're only in a very hesitating sort of fashion releasing information about what they're doing, it doesn't seem like something they're really prioritizing. But I think you pointed out something important, that continued maintenance is, it's important that people know about it. Especially because it really undercuts the idea that the US has pulled out of support for the offensive operations, as you say. But also, even if Biden goes through with his promises to significantly cut back on arms sales to Saudi Arabia, that maintenance presumably provides leverage that in theory they could ask for things like the end to the blockade that they don't consider a blockade if they have this very important leverage that allows the Saudi Air Force to continue to operate.
Yeah, it's a good point. I want to just flesh that out a little bit. The first thing is that maintenance is critical for the ongoing, it's not even just leverage, it's critical for the daily operations of Saudi warplanes. If they're not getting replacement tires for F-15s, those planes are not going to be able to land and they're not going to be able to, you know, more importantly, enforce the Saudi blockade. So that's really critical, not just as leverage, but for the daily operations. And it's also important to note that the Biden administration has begun the approval process for a whole batch of weapon sales for Saudi Arabia and the UAE. It was welcome that they did that initial pause, you know, as they reviewed, but they're now in the process of approval and to look at you know, which of those weapon deliveries that were promised under the Trump administration are going to be followed through with. We do have some time to, you know, to block those sales, and Congress can take action in the annual Pentagon budget, the NDAA that we've talked about before. But that's also really alarming that selling weapons to Saudi Arabia at this point is even on the table. So, and that's another question that Tim Lender King could not answer is what, okay, they said, you know, to their credit, they said they didn't want the fuel restrictions to continue and they wanted the free flow of this fuel into the country, but they didn't make clear what they were using as leverage to get Saudi Arabia to stop the fuel restrictions and to lift the blockade.
Well, and now you've identified two potential areas where that could happen. And in terms of the arms sales, this is something that we've seen, I think, a lot of movement on over the past few years, where not only a good number of Democrats have been pushing for an end to that, but there's also some Republicans that seem at least a little bit willing to question some of the military partnership between the two countries. So presumably this is an area where maybe pressure could be successful. You've mentioned what your organization is doing, what Congress could potentially do. For people watching this, what can they do to push for either not doing the arms sales or for an end to the blockade?
Yeah, so I think that's really important that we keep the drumbeat, and I'm so happy to have a platform on this show to discuss this issue. A quick action folks can take is to go to endtheblockade.com, and they can write their members of Congress, their representative, and their two senators, and urge that they make a public statement and call on the Biden administration to use the leverage that they do have to call on Saudi to lift the blockade. So that's a really easy step folks can take is endtheblockade.com. One thing that I will let folks know, announce on the show, is that we're going to be getting a Senate letter circulated soon. So, you know, urging your members to sign on to that letter when it gets circulated. I mean, endtheblockade.com will have, you know, exactly what to tell your legislator and call for them to sign on to this really important Dear Colleague letter that's going to be starting to circulate in the coming days.
I think that's great, and a great call to action for people who care about this issue. Please get involved. As we've talked about for, I think, more than 3 years now, we've been talking about this. There's been a great deal of needless suffering and death already that is regrettably locked in, but things are looking pretty bad in the future too. And so hopefully now with a change in administration, we can have a change in our influence in Saudi Arabia and in Yemen. So hopefully people will do that. And as always, appreciate your work in this area and for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much, John. Really appreciate you and, you know, everything that the Young Turks have been doing on, you know, to try to end US complicity in the war in Yemen. It's really vital.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adarola. I'll see you soon.